Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jeanelle Fury. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning. Our guest this morning is award-winning author Ellen Fannin, who is also a practicing veterinarian, former missionary, and church pianist organist. She and her retired Air Force pilot turned pastor husband have been foster parents to more than 40 children and the adoptive parents of two sons. Her first novel, Other People's Children, is a humorous account of the life of a foster parent. Her latest novel, Save the Date, features a lot of Ellen's humorous writing style, but also contains deep emotional insights. She lives in Valparaiso, Florida, with her husband, son, and assorted pets. Good morning, Ellen, and welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Ellen, we're very excited to have you, and so I'm going to kick us off. In addition to being an award-winning author, which is a great accomplishment in itself, you are a practicing veterinarian. What childhood experiences influenced you to choose that career path?
Well, I've always loved animals, and we always had dogs when I was growing up, and our dogs were considered part of the family, which was not maybe quite so common back then as it is now. But my parents were real softies when it came to our pets. And I remember specifically when I was a teenager, one of our dachshunds, his name was Gus, he became paralyzed in the rear legs due to a ruptured disc in his back. And back then, neurosurgery was not very common, but there was not much hope without the surgery. So my father, who had been saving money to buy a new camera, he was one of his passions was photography, and he always wanted the newest and the best of cameras and equipment and so on. And he just said, well, there goes my camera. So Gus had the surgery, and he made a full recovery. But my dad never let Gus forget the fact that he'd cost him his camera. But anyway, I wasn't really one of those kids who knew from the time that I was little that I wanted to be a vet. Didn't really decide on that career path until I was a freshman in college. And even then, I wasn't sure if I could handle everything that went along with being a vet. For one thing, I'm very squeamish, and I still pass out at the sight of human blood or human injuries, and that's pretty embarrassing as a healthcare professional. So it took a little while to get over that hurdle.
Story. And I know what you mean about pets, you know, the difference a couple of decades ago compared to now. When we grew up, I had a dog, and very similar to your story, it was a family pet. It was a family member. And other kids, we grew up in a lot of farmland, and other kids just didn't get it. You let your dog in the house? They're working dogs. Dogs belong outside. And
right. It's
just a different world. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, quite a bit has changed.
We were not huge on pets as kids. Our thing was parakeets, would you believe, when I was growing up. But my husband passed away now, but he was a huge dog lover. So we always had dogs. And now that he has passed and both of my dogs have passed, my thing is my cat. I absolutely love my little kitten. Well, he's not a kitten anymore. But I'll tell you, the only thing that drives me crazy about being a pet lover and a pet owner is the pet hair.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm there with you.
It is everywhere. I have finally resigned myself to the fact that if you're a pet owner, you're going to have pet hair, and people just have to love you as you are.
That's Right. No wardrobe is complete without cat hair, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's just no getting around it. Well, Ellen, I would like to ask you, in your veterinary practice, and I assume it sounds like you do small animal veterinary work, correct?
I do. I did horses when I first practiced, but I haven't done horses for a while. So it's limited to small animals and exotics.
Okay. How do you see God at work in your veterinary practice?
Well, I view every animal as God's creation, and I feel that pets are one of God's gifts to us. Pets have the ability to teach us so many spiritual truths, like unconditional love and forgiveness, and just so many other applicable things. I'm just always amazed at the variety and the diversity of animals that God created. There is a saying in veterinary medicine that real doctors treat more than one species. So I feel really fortunate to be able to treat many different species of animals.
That's beautiful. I love that.
I wanted to share this with you ladies. Jean, as you know, we interviewed a gentleman on the radio, Ellen, a while back, who he's a morning host on the Christian radio station, and he does these little quips about different things that he's learned in life, and he talked about his grandchildren and how they had to put down one of their dogs recently, and his one granddaughter had a really hard time with that, and somehow the subject of pets and heaven came up, and I guess the little girl asked, "Will I see my dog in heaven?" And his answer was, apparently this actually came from Billy Graham, and the answer was, "If seeing your dog in heaven will make you happy in heaven, God can do that." I thought that was a really neat answer.
I love that.
Yes.
That is.
I've heard
that's fantastic.
So I love that
wow.
answer. I think that's wonderful.
I wanted to say, I think about my husband, you know, he's way above a kid, but he would love to have his dogs in heaven, I know, because he just loves them to pieces. So that really struck me this morning when I heard that.
There was a cartoon recently that I saw. Well, it was in the New Yorker several years ago, but I just saw it recently. And it's an archangel receiving someone from the clouds. And this man that's coming up through the clouds in the cartoon is bald and aged. And there is a dog behind the archangel running towards him. And the caption says, "Oh, so you're little Johnny. Fido's been talking about you for 50 years.
How sweet.
Precious. Precious.
Oh, love it.
This old man, you're little Johnny.
Oh, it's cute.
I remember when I was a kid, I read that book, All Dogs Go to Heaven. I was at my great aunt's up in Connecticut, and she was a very, kind of a stern sort of a woman, you know? And I read that book, and I thought it was so wonderful. And I said something about, "Aunt Marge, is that true?" And she said, "Of course not. You know the only books that are true are history books."
Oh,
okay.
Okay, so, Ellen, I'm going to get back to us interviewing you. How's that?
That's fine. Of course.
So another, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Another part of your life for you and your husband has been foster parenting. What motivated you to become foster parents, and are you still doing it?
Okay. To answer your second question, we stopped doing foster parenting about 4 or 5 years ago, perhaps. But what got us motivated initially was when our family was on the mission field in Indonesia from 1999 to 2001. We were actively involved in the Jakarta Street Children Ministry, which was a ministry that was begun by another lady in our mission group. And street children children are just what they sound like. They're children that literally live on the street, like stray animals. Now, some of these kids have been abandoned by their parents who just weren't able to take care of them. Some of them are runaways or just on the streets for whatever reason. And in third world countries, they don't have the social services that we take for granted here. We saw children as young as 5 years old living on the streets. And so our organization rented a house for the street boys. And unfortunately, there are not a lot of little street girls because they just don't survive on the streets. Enough said, I guess, there. And we hired people as daily caretakers, provided their food. We homeschooled them because most of these boys were way behind in school, so they couldn't go to public school. We provided medical care, and we taught them the love of Jesus. And these boys could stay as long as they followed the rules. Some of them didn't want to follow the rules, and they were free to go. There was nobody there that was going to stop them. But that ministry made a huge impact on us, and we knew that we wanted to make a difference in the lives of children when we came back to the States. And of course, we realized that we're not going to be able to save all of the children, but perhaps we would be able to make a small difference in the lives of a few. So that's kind of how we got involved in foster parenting.
Wow, that's amazing.
That really is very impressive work, Ellen, and that you would be moved that way and let the Lord lead you that direction is just so heartwarming. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, and I'm glad also that you touched on your missionary work in Indonesia, did you say?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I had thought about asking you that, but then I was afraid that we would have too many questions, so we would run out of time. So I'm glad that you touched on that as well, Ellen. And I can't imagine the heartbreak that a person must experience going to a country like that and seeing children living the way that they do. Because, well, we have it to a degree here in this country. We maybe don't see it as much. But to see it blatantly in front of you every day must be just absolutely gut-wrenching. So thank you for sharing that.
It's an eye-opener.
For sure.
A real eye-opener.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ellen, you have probably had some good and bad experiences with foster parenting. So could you share with us maybe some of the greatest rewards and some of the most difficult aspects of being a foster parent?
Okay, that's kind of a hard question, but I think the greatest reward comes from knowing that you've made a positive impact in the life of a child, even if perhaps that child may be too young to ever remember having been in your home. But at least for a little while, you know that you gave that child a safe and stable, loving home. One of the most difficult aspects of foster parenting, I think, is you have so little say in the welfare of the children that are in your care. And these are the children that you've lived with, you've cared for, you've loved, and you know them better than anybody else. But in the end, it is the system, and I say system with air quotes, which are the people who have never laid eyes on these children, and those are the ones that are making the life-changing decisions for these kids, and that's very frustrating. The other thing that's really hard is when children leave your home for whatever reason, maybe they're reunited with family or transferred to another foster home or whatever, but you rarely ever know what happened to those children. So, you know, there's still children that I worry about, what happened to them, what became of them, when they went back to family, did the family get their act together so that they're in a safe home? You know, just what became of them? And there's still a few kids that I believe fell through the cracks that I worry about that just continue to haunt me.
I can certainly understand that. I think I would be the type of person that would want to adopt them all.
Our 15-year-old was actually our first foster child, and we adopted him. Of course, now I'd like to give him back, but that's a whole nother story.
Yep, and I'll tell you, it's not even just a foster thing. I'd give up our son on occasion as well, and he's ours. It's those teenage years. Ellen, what have you seen in the way of foster parenting change and how it's changed over the years, just in the time that you've been involved with it?
Well, foster parenting, like everything else, has become more politically correct and more openly resistant to Christian influence over the past few years. And this ultimately, at least partially, affected our decision to give up doing foster care after 10 years. Well, that and the fact that we were kind of getting old and tired. But yeah, the culture is not a good one.
And that's so typical of all of, you know, everything we see these days is that way. We've discussed that with other authors, too. How do you get your message across without being shut down, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and all these places? It just seems like there's more and more resistance to that Christian message. And like one of our guests did point out, though, we're in our ability to express ourselves, thank God. You know, I mean, we don't have to.
So far.
The government for permission to read our Bible or whatever, but there is a lot of frustration.
Not yet.
Not yet, but I know.
Yeah.
Right.
Not yet. Yep. Yeah, it's coming.
Yes, absolutely. Well, ladies, I think at this point we're going to go ahead and take a short break. And this is where I just remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with hosts Patty Sheen and Jean Alfieri. Today, our guest is Ellen Fannin. Ellen is actually an author. We've talked about everything but that to date because she has so many other interesting aspects of her life that we were hoping she would share with listeners, and she has. She's a practicing veterinarian. She's also a former missionary, and she and her husband have done foster parenting. So those topics are pretty much what we have focused on at this point. If you came in on part of the show or you didn't get to listen to all of it or whatever, please go to my website, which is pattysheen.com. That's spelled P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E. There you will find a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page, and click on that. You will find links to all of our shows, and you can listen to this one again and hopefully refer it to friends and family. Also, under each show listing is a more information tab, and click on that, and you will find more information about Ellen, and you will also find a link to her website and her social media. So we hope that you will do that. So getting back to our discussion, Ellen, as you know, Ellen, our guests either speak to ways that they bring light to others through their ministry, their writing, their other creative endeavors, whatever, but many of them also share with us a time in their life when things were not so good, either it was a difficult time, a dark time, and how they found their way back to light. Is there a particular time in your life that was really difficult for you?
Yes, there was, and it was a really tough time. In 1984, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and 6 weeks later, she died. And this was a huge shock because she had always been perfectly healthy, and she was only 66 years old, which That number keeps getting younger and younger all the time because that is the age that I am now. So, so that's kind of hitting home to me as I turn 66. My mom was probably my closest female friend. She was the person that I could always count on to be there for me. And then 2 weeks after she died, I found out that my husband, now that was my first husband, not my current one, was having an affair. So within that short period of time, I lost my two closest friends in the world. And I struggled for a very long time with depression and insecurity. And I kept everything inside because I just did not feel like I could share what was going on in my life with anybody else. I also felt like I had to be strong for my father, who was just lost without my mom. He was 14 years older than she was, so of course nobody ever expected that she would go before him. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I pretty much became his world. And to his credit, my husband was very good to my dad. And my dad loved him. I think he loved him better than he loved me sometimes. And he depended on him for so many things. So I tried to hold my marriage together, but our relationship was just never good after that point. And I was always miserable. And I felt like I was living a lie. And then 7 years later, my husband finally left me for another woman. So I remember that was probably one of the lowest points in my life. I remember pouring out my heart to God and asking him what he wanted me to do with the rest of my life, because at that time I just felt like my life was over. And then 6 weeks later, God brought me to my current husband, who is an amazing, strong Christian man. And we will celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary in October.
Oh, wow.
And meeting my husband was in itself a true intervention from God, because I had been a member of a local church that I hadn't attended for more than 7 years because I had taken the job as the organist for another church in town, which was actually the one my parents went to. And then one night after everything fell apart, I just felt the strong leading to go back to my church. And that night I met my husband, who had just moved into the area after being transferred here with the military. I credit my husband largely with helping me in my spiritual growth, because he has been the living example of what a true Christian husband and father should be. So my life in the 30 years that I've been with him is just a complete 180 from what it was before. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that God brought us together.
Ellen, that is such an amazing and inspiring story. Oh, my goodness, and very deeply personal. Thank you so much for sharing that with us and with our listeners. I'm sure that that accounting will be an inspiration to those who hear it. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ellen, it touched me. We've never met before, and I wanted to give you a hug. I'm getting teary. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
I can feel your pain. Oh, my goodness. I'm so delighted, and happy anniversary to you both.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Definitely happy anniversary. That is absolutely wonderful. And I wanted to mention, too, I saw earlier where you're a pianist and an organist both. We are very blessed in our church to have one of each. We have a pianist and an organist, and they play together every Sunday morning. And they are amazing. I just love to hear the two of them play. And I am so envious of people that can play that instrument, because I've probably mentioned on the show before, my dad played piano strictly by ear. I took lessons for several years, but
I heard
never
that,
quite
yes.
got there. the way he did, you know. And if I were to sit down and play the piano today, I would have to probably play the same piece 20 times to really get through it, you know, and to know people that actually have that talent to can just sit down and play. God bless you. That's absolutely wonderful.
It is a gift.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it is a gift for sure. So in addition to your many pursuits, you're a writer. So let's talk about that a little bit. What motivated you to write your first novel?
My first novel is the one that still isn't published yet. So, but I've always loved to write stories. I can remember from the time I was 3 years old, before I even knew how to write, I would draw pictures and tell myself the story out loud. And when I was six, I wrote a book about John Glenn's orbit around the Earth. That was such a monumental event that it was broadcast over the loudspeakers into our classroom. I was in first grade at the time. And then I went home and I wrote a book about John Glenn. So I've always loved writing stories. I wrote stories all through school, and I was the editor of our high school yearbook and literary magazine. And then, of course, that kind of got sidetracked with vet school and my veterinary career. But I've always had that itch to write. For several years, I wrote a pet care column in our local newspaper, which I did until we left for the mission field. My first novel, the one that's not published, I wrote in 1987. It's called Honor Thy Father, and I sent it to every publisher I could find, and it was rejected by every publisher I sent it to. So I finally gave up and tucked it away. And then about 5 years ago, I dug it out, and I completely rewrote it as a Christian novel, and I tried again with the same results. But in the meantime, I became involved in the Destined Word Weavers, which it's a Christian writing critique group, and I attended my first writers' conference, where I learned so much about the writing industry that I just did not know. I'm still such a novice at all of this. And during this time, I wrote my second novel, Other People's Children, which was based on our experiences as foster parents. And I was blessed to have it published by Alexio, a small traditional Christian publisher, in 2017. Then Save the Date, which was my third novel, was released by Wing Publications this past October. And my fourth novel, Don't Bite the Doctor, which is about a veterinarian, surprise, should be released pretty soon, also from Winged Publications. And then after that, I'm going to dust off my first novel and try to get it published again.
Don't Bite the Doctor sounds fantastic. I can't wait for that one myself.
Well, I figured, you know, veterinary novels have been done to death, but a lady in my word weavers convinced me, or kind of set that idea ablaze in my head. So I said, oh, why not? So I did.
And I commend you for that. I hear very similar things about there being too many. I write about a rescue pug named Zuggy, and I hear all the time, oh, there's too many dog books out there. But if you are a dog lover, there will never be too many dog books out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see.
That's absolutely right. And I'm going to tell you what, Ellen, I already have Don't Bite the Doctor on my Christmas list to give to my granddaughter for Christmas. So,
oh, thank you.
You don't even get the book out there.
Yay.
Well, Ellen, where did you get? First of all, let me tell you that I was blessed to actually read Save the Date. I received a copy of that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, where did you get the idea for the novel?
I got the idea for Save the Date from a post that I just happened across on a classmate's website. I don't know if you're familiar with Classmates. It's a website for alumni of a particular school where people can post information about themselves or look up information about people they went to school with. And that post kind of got me wondering about what happened to some of the people in my class. How did they turn out? Because like the protagonist in my novel Save the Date, whose name is Hannah Jensen, I moved away from my hometown over 40 years ago, and I've pretty much lost touch with everybody from my high school years. So that kind of sparked the idea for a novel for Save the Date, because when Hannah receives her invitation to her 25th high school reunion, it starts stirring up all these memories from her past.
Well, I truly enjoyed the story, and one of the things that I really enjoyed was the way that you Hannah relives her experiences through her daughter, through her teenage daughter. And I don't want to say a whole lot because I don't want to give away the book, but you know, I don't want to give away the whole story, but I just really enjoyed the style. I thought it was a fun book to read. Plus, it had a strong
message. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Alan, tell our listeners, what is the message that you hope to convey with Save the Date?
Well, of course, the Save the Date is about this woman, Hannah, who is a widow raising a teenage daughter, who is thinking about returning for her high school reunion. And in the process, she's fantasizing about reconnecting with her old boyfriend. But at the same time, she's also a little bit apprehensive because there's a group of mean girls who made her life miserable in school. And I mean, didn't everybody have those back in school? So she's a little bit apprehensive about not wanting to open up those old wounds. And as Patty said, the story goes back and forth between Hannah's past as a teenager and her present as the single mother of a teenager. So interwoven with all this is Hannah's spiritual journey as a teenager. And like a lot of people, and I'm not sure I've really seen this addressed a lot in Christian literature, but Hannah really believes she's a Christian because she is a good person and she goes to church. But she is later challenged with the truth when she attends a different church. And the only reason she's going to this church is because it's her boyfriend's church and she's going to please her boyfriend's mother. So that's the only reason she's even there. But at this church and later at a church camp, she is confronted with the fact that what she has believed her whole life is not true, that simply being a good person and going to church is not going to get her into heaven. So she has to come to realize that she is a sinner. She has to understand that Jesus came to die for her sins and she accepts him as her Lord and Savior in order to be saved. But unfortunately, there is a huge stumbling block in her path, which is another girl who attends the boyfriend's church who claims to be a Christian, but acts anything but a Christian. In fact, she's one of the girls in that mean clique who has bullied Hannah for years and made her life miserable. So because of this other girl's hypocrisy, Hannah really wrestles with what true faith looks like. I think that Christian hypocrisy is a huge stumbling block for many people, and this is a subject that I don't see routinely addressed in Christian literature.
I think, me having read the book, Ellen, I think you did a very good job with that, too. I just wanted to throw that out there. But I think
you did a good job getting that
message across. And I could identify with a lot of the book because I was one of the ones in school who was pretty much bullied. But the only difference is I never even had a boyfriend.
Oh.
But I could understand what Hannah was feeling, except that she was probably a lot more brazen than I was about standing up to them. I was like, just cowering off in my little corner and letting them, you know, like, just leave me alone. But no, I did. I really thought that the message that you conveyed came across very well.
Thank you so much.
Ellen, even though the story carries a strong spiritual message, which it definitely does, you use humor throughout the novel. And oh my goodness, I just have to say here that I absolutely love the blind date scenes for poor Hannah. Of course,
Thank you.
All turned out to be disasters. It was funny. I really enjoyed that. So why do you think humor is an important tool when addressing a serious subject?
Well, you know, I think that reading should be fun or enjoyable, and even serious topics don't have to be addressed in such a dreary manner, because humor is a gift from God. But I believe that we see so little humor in Christian literature, and you know, that may be why people don't necessarily read a lot of Christian literature, because it's just not fun. You know, I think a lot of Christian novels are just so serious, they're depressing. So I want my readers to have laugh out loud moments when they read my books, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to be frivolous. I do want them to come away with deep, thought-provoking looks at life, and I always want them to hear the gospel in my work. And, you know, I think that the humor is maybe one thing that kind of sets my work apart from other Christian works.
I thought you used the humor very well. And I, yes, I did have some laugh-out-loud moments when I was reading that book, believe me.
Oh, good.
Ellen, what is next on your writing horizon? You talked a little bit about your endeavors. What's on your desk right now?
Well, I'm waiting for the release of Don't Bite the Doctor. And after that, as I said earlier, I'm going to dust off my first novel, Honor Thy Father, and see if I can finally get that published after 35 years. I've also done some other writing. I have actually, in 2022, I have 6 devotionals that are coming out in All God's Creatures Daily Devotions, which I'm really excited about. This is all based on lessons we learn from animals. So that is great. And that's a division of guideposts. So that's on my horizon. I write a weekly humor blog on my website. And gosh, I guess that's about it.
That's neat. You're very busy.
Yes,
I try to be. It keeps me out of trouble.
Ellen, I'll share a quick story with you that you might appreciate. We had 2 huskies for several years. My husband and I had gone away for the weekend, and my daughter also went to the same place but in a separate vehicle, so she came home a little bit before us. And she said, hey, do you want me to let the dogs back in? And she had bought some fast food, and when she got to the house, she threw that fast food in the empty trash can. There wasn't any food there. There was just wrappers. But by the time we got home, here the dogs had found those wrappers, and they were all over the floor. Well, then, to my chagrin, I noticed a pill bottle top laying on the floor, and I don't know, what did they get into? And I, you know, human pills, I always kept behind the cabinet. But our one dog had thyroid medicine that he had to take every day. And sure as shooting, in the back computer room here, there was that bottle laying on the floor, and it was about empty. And I mean, we really were concerned, because we had just filled it for 90 pills. Couldn't find any pills anywhere. And we called our vet. Well, it just so happened that was the night that she's off for like 24 hours.
Of course.
And, we paid the person that is the on-call. And he referred us to a vet in Pueblo, which is 80 miles away.
Mm.
And it took like 4 times to get him to answer his phone. And he referred us, he told us we had to take the dogs up to an animal hospital in Colorado Springs, which is 120 miles away, because they would need to be monitored overnight. And it was pouring rain. I mean, it was just one of those driving rains you could hardly see. And we were like, we're not doing this, you know. So we just held our breath. Everything was fine. And when our vet came back on duty, she called us and she said, well, what happened? And I said, well, as far as I could see, absolutely nothing. She said, well,
probably okay.
She said, if you didn't see symptoms within, I think it was 5 hours or something, that you were good. But I said, the funny thing was, I could just picture those two dogs sitting there on the kitchen floor, one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, I mean, we were really concerned when we realized that those children just gone. And, you know, who knows if they both took some or ate some or if whatever.
Right.
Oh, man, that was a scary moment. But I figured you being a vet, you'd be able to appreciate that story.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, next time you can just call me, okay?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Ellen, is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we and Jean, did you have anything else to say before we close out the show?
I don't. I think this has been a lovely interview. I've really enjoyed it.
I think it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed laughing with you, and I enjoyed hearing about your experiences as a vet and your missionary work and everything you talked to us about today. Ellen, was just wonderful. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ellen, and God bless you and your work. It's just been such
a
pleasure having you this morning. Wish you all the best.
Well, thank you. I so much appreciate this opportunity to talk to you and just get a little marketing out there and so far. And just really excited to be part of your program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, and we enjoyed talking with you today. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Don't forget to check out PattySheene.com. That's PattySheene.com. There you will find a link to this show, links to all of the podcasts that we have done to date, and beneath each show you will find the more information tab where you can connect with our guests and their websites and their social media. Until next time, God bless.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit